Section 9. Laying the Foundation of Intemperance. Chapter 1. Prenatal Influence. Where Reform Should Begin. The efforts of our temperance workers are not sufficiently far-reaching to banish the curse of intemperance from our land. Habits once formed are hard to overcome. The reform should begin with the mother before the birth of her children. And if God's instructions were faithfully obeyed, intemperance would not exist. It should be the constant effort of every mother to conform her habits to God's will, that she may work in harmony with Him to preserve her children from the health and life-destroying vices of the present day. Let mothers place themselves without delay in right relations to their Creator, that they may, by His assisting grace, build around their children a bulwark against dissipation and intemperance. The Habits of the Father and the Mother. As a rule, every intemperate man who rears children transmits his inclinations and evil tendencies to his offspring. The child will be affected for good or evil by the habits of the mother. She must herself be controlled by principle, and must practice temperance and self-denial if she would seek the welfare of her child. The birthright of evil tendencies. The thoughts and feelings of the mother will have a powerful influence upon the legacy she gives her child. If she allows her mind to dwell upon her own feelings, if she indulges in selfishness, if she is peevish and exacting, the disposition of her child will testify to the fact. Thus, many have received as a birthright almost unconquerable tendencies to evil. The enemy of souls understands this matter much better than do many parents. He will bring his temptations to bear upon the mother, knowing that if she does not resist him, he can, through her, affect her child. The mother's only hope is in God. She may flee to Him for strength and grace, and she will not seek in vain. God's message to every mother. The carefulness with which the mother should guard her habits of life is taught in the Scriptures. When the Lord would raise up Samson as a deliverer for Israel, the angel of Jehovah appeared to the mother with special instruction concerning her habits and also for the treatment of her child. "Beware," he said, "and now drink no wine nor strong drink, neither eat any unclean thing." Judges 13, verse 13, 7. The effect of parental influences is by many parents looked upon as a matter of little moment, but heaven does not so regard it. The message sent by an angel of God, and twice given in the most solemn manner, shows it to be deserving of our most careful thought. In the words spoken to the Hebrew mother, God speaks to all mothers in every age. "Let her beware," the angel said. "All that I commanded her, let her observe." The well-being of the child will be affected by the habits of the mother. Her appetites and passions are to be controlled by principle. There is something for her to shun, something for her to work against if she fulfills God's purpose for her in giving her a child. If before the birth of her child she is self-indulgent, if she is selfish, impatient, and exacting, these traits will be reflected in the disposition of the child. Thus, many children have received as a birthright almost unconquerable tendencies to evil. But if the mother unswervingly adheres to right principles, if she is temperate and self-denying, if she is kind, gentle, and unselfish, she may give her child these same precious traits of character. Very explicit was the command prohibiting the use of wine by the mother. Every drop of strong drink taken by her to gratify appetite endangers the physical, mental, and moral health of her child, and is a direct sin against her Creator. accountable for the welfare of future generations. If women of past generations had always moved from high considerations, realizing that future generations would be ennobled or debased by their course of action, they would have taken their stand that they could not unite their life interest with men who were cherishing unnatural appetites for alcoholic drinks and tobacco, which is a slow but sure and deadly poison, weakening the nervous system and debasing the noble faculties of the mind. If men would remain wedded to these vile habits, women should have left them to their life of single blessedness, to enjoy these companions of their choice. Women should not have considered themselves of so little value as to unite their destiny with men who had no control over their appetites, but whose principal happiness consisted in eating and drinking and gratifying their animal passions. Women have not always followed the dictates of reason instead of impulse. They have not felt in a high degree the responsibilities resting upon them to form such life connections as would not instamp upon their offspring a low degree of morals and a passion to gratify debased appetites at the expense of health and even life. God will hold them accountable in a large degree for the physical health and moral characters thus transmitted to future generations. How to Live, Number 2, 27-28. The newborn child, the inquiry of fathers and mothers should be, "What shall we do unto the child that shall be born unto us?" We have brought before the reader what God has said concerning the course of the mother before the birth of her children. But this is not all. The angel Gabriel was sent from the heavenly courts to give directions for the care of children after their birth, that parents might fully understand their duty. About the time of Christ's first advent, the angel Gabriel came to Zacharias with a message similar to that given to Manoah. The aged priest was told that his wife should bear a son, whose name should be called John. "And," said the angel, "thou shalt have joy and gladness, and many shall rejoice at his birth. For he shall be great in the sight of the Lord, and shall drink neither wine nor strong drink, and he shall be filled with the Holy Ghost." This child of promise was to be brought up with strictly temperate habits. An important work of reform was to be committed to him, to prepare the way for Christ. Intemperance in every form existed among the people. Indulgence in wine and luxurious food was lessening physical strength and debasing the morals to such an extent that the most revolting crimes did not appear sinful. The voice of John was to sound forth from the wilderness in stern rebuke for the sinful indulgences of the people, and his own abstemious habits were also to be a reproof of the excesses of his time. Chapter 2. The Strength of Inherited Tendencies. Insatiable Cravings Transmitted. Both parents transmit their own characteristics, mental and physical, their dispositions and appetites, to their children. As the result of parental intemperance, children often lack physical strength and mental and moral power. Liquor drinkers and tobacco users may, and do, transmit their insatiable craving, their inflamed blood and irritable nerves, to their children. The licentious often bequeath their unholy desires, and even loathsome diseases, as a legacy to their offspring. And as the children have less power to resist temptation than have the parents, the tendency is for each generation to fall lower and lower. To the third and fourth generation, our ancestors have bequeathed to us customs and appetites which are filling the world with disease. The sins of the parents, through perverted appetite, are with fearful power visited upon the children to the third and fourth generations. The bad eating of many generations, the gluttonous and self-indulgent habits of the people, are filling our poorhouses, our prisons, and our insane asylums. Intemperance in drinking tea and coffee, wine, beer, rum, and brandy, and the use of tobacco, opium, and other narcotics has resulted in great mental and physical degeneracy, and this degeneracy is constantly increasing. The legacy to oncoming generations. Wherever the habits of the parents are contrary to physical law, the injury done to themselves will be repeated in the future generations. The race is groaning under a weight of accumulated woe because of the sins of former generations. And yet, with scarcely a thought or care, men and women of the present generation indulge in temperance by surfeiting and drunkenness, and thereby leave as a legacy for the next generation disease, enfeebled intellects, and polluted morals. Counteracting inherited tendencies. Parents may have transmitted to their children tendencies to appetite and passion, which will make more difficult the work of educating and training these children to be strictly temperate and to have pure and virtuous habits. If the appetite for unhealthy food and for stimulants and narcotics has been transmitted to them as a legacy from their parents, what a fearfully solemn responsibility rests upon the parents to counteract the evil tendencies which they have given to their children. How earnestly and diligently should the parents work to do their duty, in faith and hope, to their unfortunate offspring. To breast the tide of evil. Many suffer in consequence of the transgression of their parents. While they are not responsible for what their parents have done, it is nevertheless their duty to ascertain what are and what are not violations of the laws of health. They should avoid the wrong habits of their parents, and by correct living, place themselves in better conditions. Greater moral power now required. The necessity for the men of this generation to call to their aid the power of the will, strengthened by the grace of God, in order to withstand the temptations of Satan and resist the least indulgence of perverted appetite, is far greater than it was several generations ago. But the present generation have less power of self-control than had those who lived then. Those who indulged in these stimulants transmitted their depraved appetites and passions to their children, and greater moral power is now required to resist intemperance in all its forms. The only perfectly safe course is to stand firm, observing strict temperance in all things, and never venturing into the path of danger. Chapter 3. Formation of Behavior Patterns. Begin with infancy. Let parents begin a crusade against intemperance at their own firesides, in their own families, in the principles they teach their children to follow from their very infancy, and they may hope for success. Diligently teach. Teach your children from the cradle to practice self-denial and self-control. Impress upon their tender minds the truth that God does not design that we should live for present gratification merely, but for our ultimate good. Teach them that to yield to temptation is weak and wicked, to resist, noble and manly. These lessons will be as seeds sown in good soil, and they will bear fruit that will make your hearts glad. Importance of an early start. Too much importance cannot be placed upon the early training of children. The lessons learned, the habits formed during the years of infancy and childhood, have more to do with the formation of the character and the direction of the life than have all the instruction and training of after years. Far-reaching influence of early habits. The character is formed, to a great extent, in early years. The habits then established have more influence than any natural endowment in making men either giants or dwarfs in intellect. For the very best talents may, through wrong habits, become warped and enfeebled. The earlier in life one contracts hurtful habits, the more firmly will they hold their victim in slavery, and the more certainly will they lower his standard of spirituality. Difficult to unlearn established habits. It is a most difficult matter to unlearn the habits which have been indulged through life. The demon of intemperance is of giant strength and is not easily conquered. It will pay you, mothers, to use the precious hours which are given you by God in forming the character of your children and in teaching them to adhere strictly to the principles of temperance in eating and drinking. Creating early appetites for liquor. Teach your children to abhor stimulants. How many are ignorantly fostering in them an appetite for these things? In Europe, I have seen nurses putting the glass of wine or beer to the lips of the innocent little ones, thus cultivating in them a taste for stimulants. As they grow older, they learn to depend more and more on these things, till little by little they are overcome, drift beyond the reach of help, and at last fill a drunkard's grave. The first 3 years. Let selfishness, anger, and self-will have its course for the first 3 years of a child's life, and it will be hard to bring it to submit to wholesome discipline. Its disposition has become soured. It delights in having its own way. Parental control is distasteful. These evil tendencies grow with its growth, until in manhood, supreme selfishness and a lack of self-control place him at the mercy of the evils that run riot in our land. Weighty responsibility of parents. How difficult it is to obtain the victory over appetite when once it is established. How important that parents bring their children up with pure tastes and unperverted appetites. Parents should ever remember that upon them rests the responsibility of training their children in such a way that they will have moral stamina to resist the evil that will surround them when they go out into the world. Christ did not ask his Father to take the disciples out of the world, but to keep them from the evil in the world, to keep them from yielding to the temptations which they would meet on every hand. This prayer fathers and mothers should offer for their children. But shall they plead with God, and then leave their children to do as they please? God cannot keep children from evil if the parents do not cooperate with him. Bravely and cheerfully, parents should take up their work, carrying it forward with unwearying endeavor. Those who indulge a child's appetite and do not teach him to control his passions may afterward see, in the tobacco-loving, liquor-drinking slave whose senses are benumbed and whose lips utter falsehood and profanity, the terrible mistake they have made. Molding the character to resist temptation. The first steps in intemperance are usually taken in childhood or early youth. Stimulating food is given to the child, and unnatural cravings are awakened. These depraved appetites are pandered to as they develop. The taste continually becomes more perverted. Stronger stimulants are craved and are indulged in, till soon the slave of appetite throws aside all restraint. The evil commenced early in life and could have been prevented by the parents. We witness strenuous efforts in our country to put down intemperance. But it is found a hard matter to overpower and chain the strong, full-grown lion. If half the efforts that are put forth to stay this giant evil were directed toward enlightening parents as to their responsibility in forming the habits and characters of their children, a thousandfold more good might result than from the present course of combating only the full-grown evil. The unnatural appetite for spirituous liquors is created at home, in many cases at the very tables of those who are most zealous to lead out in the temperance campaigns. Parents should not lightly regard the work of training their children. They should employ much time in careful study of the laws which regulate our being. They should make it their first object to learn the proper manner of dealing with their children, that they may secure to them sound minds in sound bodies. Too many parents are controlled by custom instead of sound reason and the claims of God. Many who profess to be followers of Christ are sadly neglectful of home duties. They do not perceive the sacred importance of the trust which God has placed in their hands, so to mold the characters of their children that they will have moral stamina to resist the many temptations that ensnare the feet of youth. Commence with the cradle. If parents had done their duty in spreading the table with wholesome food, discarding irritating and stimulating substances, and at the same time had taught their children self-control and educated their characters to develop moral power, we should not now have to handle the lion of intemperance. After habits of indulgence have been formed and grown with their growth and strengthened with their strength, how hard, then, for those who have not been properly trained in youth to break up their wrong habits and learn to restrain themselves and their unnatural appetites. How hard to teach such ones and make them feel the necessity of Christian temperance when they reach maturity. The temperance lessons should commence with the child rocked in the cradle. The final reckoning. When parents and children meet at the final reckoning, what a scene will be presented. Thousands of children who have been slaves to appetite and debasing vice, whose lives are moral wrecks, will stand face to face with the parents who made them what they are. Who but the parents must bear this fearful responsibility? Did the Lord make these youth corrupt? Oh no. He made them in His image, a little lower than the angels. Chapter 4. Parental Example and Guidance. Responsible for Character. But few parents realize that their children are what their example and discipline have made them, and that they are responsible for the characters their children develop. There is work for mothers in helping their children to form correct habits and pure tastes. Educate the appetite. Teach the children to abhor stimulants. Bring your children up to have moral stamina to resist the evil that surrounds them. Teach them that they are not to be swayed by others, that they are not to yield to strong influences, but to influence others for good. The mother, an example. Woman is to fill a more sacred and elevated position in the family than the king upon his throne. Her great work is to make her life a living example which she would wish her children to copy. Temperance in all details of home life. Parents should so conduct themselves that their lives will be a daily lesson of self-control and forbearance to their household. We urge that the principles of temperance be carried into all the details of home life, that the example of parents should be a lesson of temperance. God will supplement the parents' endeavors. When you take up your duties as a parent, in the strength of God, with a firm determination never to relax your efforts, nor to leave your post of duty, in striving to make your children what God would have them, then God looks down upon you with approbation. He knows that you are doing the best you can, and He will increase your power. He will Himself do the part of the work that the mother or father cannot do. He will work with the wise, patient, well-directed efforts of the God-fearing mother. Parents, God does not propose to do the work that He has left for you to do in your home. You must not give up to indolence and be slothful servants if you would have your children saved from the perils that surround them in the world. Chapter 5. Teaching Self-Denial and Self-Control. Begin with babyhood. Self-denial and self-control should be taught to the children and enforced upon them, so far as consistent, from babyhood. And first, it is important that the little ones be taught that they eat to live, not live to eat, that appetite must be held in abeyance to the will, and that the will must be governed by calm, intelligent reason. Teach principles of reform. Fathers and mothers, watch unto prayer. Guard strictly against intemperance in every form. Teach your children the principles of true health reform. teach them what things to avoid in order to preserve health. Already the wrath of God has begun to be visited upon the children of disobedience. What crimes, what sins, what iniquitous practices are being revealed on every hand? Teach the true object of life. Explicit instructions have been given in the Word of God. Let these principles be carried out by the mother, with the cooperation and support of the father, and let children be trained from infancy to habits of self-control. Let them be taught that it is not the object of life to indulge sensual appetites, but to honor God and to bless their fellow men. Fathers and mothers, labor earnestly and faithfully, relying on God for grace and wisdom. Be firm and yet mild. In all your commands, aim to secure the highest good of your children, and then see that these commands are obeyed. Your energy and decision must be unwavering, yet ever in subjection to the Spirit of Christ. Then, indeed, may we hope to see our sons may be as plants grown up in their youth, that our daughters may be as cornerstones, polished after the similitude of a palace. Parents to blame if children are drunkards. There is a general mourning that intemperance prevails to such a fearful extent. But we fasten the primal cause upon fathers and mothers, who have provided upon their tables the means by which the appetites of their children are educated for exciting stimulants. They themselves have sown in their children the seeds of intemperance, and it is their fault if they become drunkards. The food is often such as to excite a desire for stimulating drinks. Luxurious dishes are placed before the children, spiced foods, rich gravies, cakes, and pastries. This highly seasoned food irritates the stomach and causes a craving for still stronger stimulants. Not only is the appetite tempted with unsuitable food, of which the children are allowed to eat freely at their meals, but they are permitted to eat between meals, and by the time they are 12 or 14 years of age, they are often confirmed dyspeptics. You have perhaps seen a picture of the stomach of one who is addicted to strong drink. A similar condition is produced under the irritating influence of fiery spices. With the stomach in such a state, there is a craving for something more to meet the demands of the appetite, something stronger and still stronger. Next, you find your sons out on the street learning to smoke. Highway of intemperance. In their ignorance or carelessness, parents give their children the first lessons in intemperance. At the table, loaded with injurious condiments, rich food, and spiced knickknacks, the child acquires a taste for that which is hurtful to him, which tends to irritate the tender coats of the stomach, inflame the blood, and strengthen the animal passions. The appetite soon craves something stronger, and tobacco is used to gratify that craving. This indulgence, only increasing the unnatural longing for stimulants, liquor drinking is soon resorted to, and drunkenness follows. This is the course of the great highway to intemperance. Moral powers paralyzed. Through the channel of appetite, the passions are inflamed, and the moral powers are paralyzed, so that parental instruction in the principles of morality and true goodness falls upon the ear without affecting the heart. The most fearful warnings and threatenings of the Word of God are not powerful enough to arouse the benumbed intellect and awaken the violated conscience.
The indulgence of appetite and passion fever and debilitate the mind and disqualify for education. Our youth need a physiological education as well as other literary and scientific knowledge. It is important for them to understand the relation that their eating and drinking and general habits have to health and life. As they understand their own frames, they will know how to guard against debility and disease. With a sound constitution, there is hope of accomplishing almost anything. Benevolence, love, and piety can be cultivated. A want of physical vigor will be manifested in the weakened moral powers. The apostle says, "Let not sin therefore reign in your mortal body, that ye should obey it in the lusts thereof." It is somebody's business. You should study temperance in all things. You must study it in what you eat and in what you drink. And yet you say, "It is nobody's business what I eat, or what I drink, or what I place upon my table." It is somebody's business, unless you take your children and shut them up, or go into the wilderness where you will not be a burden upon others, and where your unruly, vicious children will not corrupt the society in which they mingle. Educate for moral independence. Parents should educate their children to have moral independence, not to follow impulse and inclination, but to exercise their reasoning powers and to act from principle. Let mothers inquire, not for the latest fashion, but for the path of duty and usefulness, and direct the steps of their children therein. Simple habits, pure morals, and a noble independence in the right course will be of more value to the youth than the gifts of genius, the endowments of learning, or the external polish which the world can give them. Teach your children to walk in the ways of righteousness, and they, in turn, will lead others into the same path. Thus may you see at last that your life has not been in vain, for you have been instrumental in bringing precious fruit to the garner of God. Parents to study the laws of life. Parents should make it their first business to understand the laws of life and health, that nothing shall be done by them in the preparation of food or through any other habits which will develop wrong tendencies in their children. How carefully should mothers study to prepare their tables with the most simple, healthful food, that the digestive organs may not be weakened, the nervous forces unbalanced, and the instruction which they should give their children counteracted by the food placed before them. This food either weakens or strengthens the organs of the stomach and has much to do in controlling the physical and moral health of the children, who are God's blood-bought property. What a sacred trust is committed to parents to guard the physical and moral constitutions of their children, so that the nervous system may be well balanced and the soul not be endangered. Children also to understand physiology. Parents should seek to awaken in their children an interest in the study of physiology. From the first dawn of reason, the human mind should become intelligent in regard to the physical structure. We may behold and admire the work of God in the natural world, but the human habitation is the most wonderful. It is therefore of the highest importance that among the studies selected for children, physiology occupy an important place. All children should study it. And then parents should see to it that practical hygiene is added. Children are to be trained to understand that every organ of the body and every faculty of the mind is the gift of a good and wise God, and that each is to be used to His glory. Right habits in eating and drinking and dressing must be insisted upon. Wrong habits render the youth less susceptible to Bible instruction. The children are to be guarded against the indulgence of appetite, and especially against the use of stimulants and narcotics. Prepared to meet temptation. Children should be trained and educated so that they may calculate to meet with difficulties and expect temptations and dangers. They should be taught to have control over themselves and to nobly overcome difficulties. And if they do not willfully rush into danger and needlessly place themselves in the way of temptation, if they avoid evil influences and vicious society, and then are unavoidably compelled to be in dangerous company, they will have strength of character to stand for the right and preserve principle, and will come forth in the strength of God with their morals untainted. The moral powers of youth who have been properly educated if they make God their trust, will be equal to stand the most powerful test. If right principles in regard to temperance were implanted in the youth who were to form and mold society, there would be little necessity for temperance crusades. Firmness of character, moral control, would prevail. And in the strength of Jesus, the temptations of these last days would be resisted. Chapter 6. Youth and the Future. An Index to the Future. The youth of today are a sure index to the future of society. And as we view them, what can we hope for that future? The majority are fond of amusement and averse to work. They lack moral courage to deny self and to respond to the claims of duty. They have but little self-control and become excited and angry on the slightest occasion. Very many in every age and station of life are without principle or conscience. And with their idle, spendthrift habits, they are rushing into vice and are corrupting society, until our world is becoming a second Sodom. The time to establish good habits. If correct and virtuous habits are formed in youth, they will generally mark the course of the possessor through life. In most cases, it will be found that those who in later life reverence God and honor the right learned that lesson before there was time for the world to stamp its image of sin upon the soul. Those of mature age are generally as insensible to new impressions as is the hardened rock. But youth is impressible. Youth is the time to acquire knowledge for daily practice through life. A right character may then be easily formed. It is the time to establish good habits, to gain and to hold the power of self-control. Youth is the sowing time, and the seed sown determines the harvest, both for this life and the life to come. To be temperate is to be manly. The only way in which any can be secure against the power of intemperance is to abstain wholly from wine, beer, and strong drinks. We must teach our children that in order to be manly, they must let these things alone. God has shown us what constitutes true manliness. It is he that overcometh who will be honored, and whose name will not be blotted out of the book of life. In our large cities, there are saloons on the right hand and on the left, tempting passers-by to indulge an appetite which, once established, is exceedingly hard to overcome. The youth should be trained never to touch tobacco or intoxicating drink. Alcohol robs men of their reasoning powers. Nadab and Abihu had formed the habit of drinking. Anything that lessens the physical power enfeebles the mind and makes it less clear to discriminate between good and evil, between right and wrong. This principle is illustrated in the case of Nadab and Abihu. God gave them a most sacred work to perform, permitting them to come near to himself in their appointed service. But they had a habit of drinking wine, and they entered upon the holy service in the sanctuary with confused minds. And there went out fire from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord. A warning to parents and youth. Parents and children should be warned by the history of Nadab and Abihu. Appetite, indulged, perverted the reasoning powers, and led to the breaking of an express command, which brought the judgment of God upon them. Notwithstanding children may not have had the right instruction, and their characters not have been properly molded, God proposes to connect them with himself as he did Nadab and Abihu, if they will heed his commands. If they will with faith and courage bring their will in submission to the will of God, he will teach them, and their lives may be like the pure white lily, full of fragrance on the stagnant waters. They must resolve in the strength of Jesus to control inclination and passion, and every day win victories over Satan's temptations. This is the way God has marked out for men to serve His high purposes. The one worthy of honor. The young man who is determined to keep his appetite under the control of God, and who refuses the first temptation to drink intoxicating liquor, saying courteously but firmly, "No, thank you," is the one who is worthy of honor. Let young men take their stand as total abstainers. Even though the men standing high in the world have not the moral courage to take their stand boldly against a habit that is ruinous to health and life. The influence of one consecrated youth. One youth who has been instructed by right home training will bring solid timbers into his character building, and by his example and life, if his powers are rightly employed, he will become a power in our world to lead others upward and onward in the path of righteousness. The salvation of one soul is the salvation of many souls. Weaving a web of habits. Remember that you are daily weaving for yourself a web of habits. If these habits are according to the Bible rule, you are going every day in steps heavenward, growing in grace and the knowledge of the truth. And like Daniel, God will give you wisdom as He gave to him. You will not choose the paths of selfish gratification. Practice habits of strictest temperance, and be careful to keep sacred the laws which God has established to govern your physical being. God has claims upon your powers. Therefore, careless inattention to the laws of health is sin. The better you observe the laws of health, the more clearly can you discern temptations and resist them, and the more clearly can you discern the value of eternal things. Daniel's example. No young man or young woman could be more sorely tempted than were Daniel and his companions. To these four Hebrew youth were apportioned wine and meat from the king's table. But they chose to be temperate. They saw that perils were on every side, and that if they resisted temptation, they must make most decided efforts on their part and trust the results with God. The youth who desire to stand as Daniel stood must exert their spiritual powers to the very utmost, cooperating with God, and trusting wholly in the strength that He has promised to all who come to Him in humble obedience. There is a constant warfare to be maintained between virtue and vice. The discordant elements of the one and the pure principles of the other are at work striving for the mastery. Satan is approaching every soul with some form of temptation on the point of indulgence of appetite. Intemperance is fearfully prevalent. Look where we will, we behold this evil fondly cherished. Honorable to refuse. The followers of Jesus will never be ashamed to practice temperance in all things. Then why should any young man blush with shame to refuse the wine cup or the foaming mug of beer? A refusal to indulge perverted appetite is an honorable act. To sin is unmanly. To indulge in injurious habits of eating and drinking is weak, cowardly, debased. But to deny perverted appetite is strong, brave, noble. In the Babylonian court, Daniel was surrounded by allurements to sin, but by the help of Christ, he maintained his integrity. He who cannot resist temptation, when every facility for overcoming has been placed within his reach, is not registered in the books of heaven as a man. Dare to be a Daniel. Dare to stand alone. Have courage to do the right. A cowardly and silent reserve before evil associates, while you listen to their devices, makes you one with them. Come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you, and will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters. Moral courage needed. At all times and on all occasions, it requires moral courage to adhere to the principles of strict temperance. We may expect that by following such a course, we shall surprise those who do not totally abstain from all stimulants. But how are we to carry forward the work of reform if we conform to the injurious habits and practices of those with whom we associate? In the name and strength of Jesus, every youth may conquer the enemy today on the point of perverted appetite. My dear young friends, advance, step by step, until all your habits shall be in harmony with the laws of life and health. He who overcame in the wilderness of temptation declares, "To him that overcometh will I grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame, and am set down with my Father in his throne." Not removed from temptation. Daniel loved, feared, and obeyed God. Yet he did not flee away from the world to avoid its corrupting influence. In the providence of God, he was to be in the world, yet not of the world. With all the temptations and fascinations of court life surrounding him, he stood in the integrity of his soul, firm as a rock in his adherence to principle. He made God his strength, and was not forsaken of him in his time of greatest need. The result of faithful home training. Daniel's parents had trained him in his childhood to habits of strict temperance. They had taught him that he must conform to nature's laws in all his habits, that his eating and drinking had a direct influence upon his physical, mental, and moral nature, and that he was accountable to God for his capabilities, for he held them all as a gift from God, and must not, by any course of action, dwarf or cripple them. As the result of this teaching, the law of God was exalted in his mind and reverenced in his heart. During the early years of his captivity, Daniel was passing through an ordeal which was to familiarize him with courtly grandeur, with hypocrisy, and with paganism. A strange school indeed to fit him for a life of sobriety, industry, and faithfulness. And yet he lived uncorrupted by the atmosphere of evil with which he was surrounded. The experience of Daniel and his youthful companions illustrates the benefits that may result from an abstemious diet, and shows what God will do for those who will cooperate with him in the purifying and uplifting of the soul. They were an honor to God, and a bright and shining light in the court of Babylon. God's call to us. In this history, we hear the voice of God addressing us individually, bidding us gather up all the precious rays of light upon this subject of Christian temperance, and place ourselves in right relation to the laws of health. We want a share in the eternal inheritance. We want a place in the city of God, free from every impurity. All heaven is watching to see how we are fighting the battle against temptation. Let all who profess the name of Christ so walk before the world that they may teach by example as well as precept the principles of true living. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. Students to take care. The character of the food and the manner in which it is eaten exert a powerful influence on the health. Many students have never made a determined effort to control the appetite or to observe proper rules in regard to eating. Some eat too much at their meals, and some eat between meals whenever the temptation is presented. The need of carefulness in habits of diet should be impressed on the minds of all students. I have been instructed that those attending our schools are not to be served with flesh foods or with preparations of food that are known to be unwholesome. Nothing that will serve to encourage a desire for stimulants should be placed on the table. I appeal to all to refuse to eat those things that will injure the health. Thus, they can serve the Lord by sacrifice. Assert your manly liberty. Young men who think that you cannot eat the simple, wholesome food provided at the Health Institute and that you must go down to the restaurant and get something to gratify your appetite, it is time for you to arouse and assert your manly liberty. Enter not into temptation. Will you allow temporal, earthly employment to lead you into temptation? Will you doubt your Lord who loves you? Will you neglect the work given you of doing service for God? Your associations are with a class who are earthly, sensual, and devilish. You have breathed moral malaria, and you are in serious danger of failing where you might win if you would place yourself in right relation with Jesus, making his life and character your criterion. Now, in order to escape the corruption that is in the world through lust, you must be a partaker of the divine nature. It is your duty to keep your soul in the atmosphere of heaven. You should not place yourself where you will be corrupted by dissolute companionship. As one who loves your soul, I beseech you to shun, as far as possible, the company of the profligate, the licentious, and the ungodly. Pray, lead us not into temptation. That is, do not, O Lord, suffer us to be overcome when assailed by temptation. Watch and pray, lest ye enter into temptation. There is a difference between being tempted and entering into temptation. Jesus, social and temperate. Jesus rebuked intemperance, self-indulgence, and folly. Yet he was social in his nature. He accepted invitations to dine with the learned and noble, as well as the poor and afflicted. On these occasions, his conversation was elevating and instructive, holding his hearers entranced. He gave no license to scenes of dissipation and revelry, yet innocent happiness was pleasing to him. A Jewish marriage was a solemn and impressive occasion, the pleasure and joy of which were not displeasing to the Son of Man. Redemption, or the Miracles of Jesus, pages 13-14. Direct, but do not repress. The Word of God does not condemn or repress man's activity, but tries to give it a right direction. While the world is filling mind and soul with excitement, the Lord puts the Bible into your hands for you to study, to appreciate, and to heed as a guide to your steps. The Word is your light.